on in the booth at the gate outside. When they pull up, they give me loose. Yeah, jump out, boys.
All right. I asked him what songs he likes, and he said Headlines by Drake, which I don't have. So I had to quick grab. This is as close as I could get. Travis Scott doing Sicko Mode with featuring Drake. So that's as close as I could get for Michael Dillon Thomas, who is a candidate for Congressional District 1. He is young. We'll talk about that. So his style of rap is not necessarily Run DMC and, Kool Moe Dee, like some of us with a few more years under our belts might say. But Michael Dillon Thomas is a lawyer. He does trial law as a civil trial attorney. He graduated here from Washington High School, went on to graduate college at 19, then went to Yale Law School, passed the bar at 23, worked for the Trump campaign on grassroots stuff, worked in the Federalist Society at Yale, and he joins us now. Michael Dillon Thompson, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. I know it may not be the Drake of your choice, but was I close enough?
Hey, it works for me. I'm actually a big fan of that song.
Excellent. And also, just a small note, I had heard your name as Dillon Thompson from somebody who I work with who had known you a long time, but you kind of go by either, and so that's why you have all three in your name. Is that right, Michael Dillon Thompson? As your website says, the longest name on the ballot, which I think is funny.
Yeah, exactly. I used to tell people that my family was so poor we could only afford one first name. I've got two older brothers, and we're all Michael Thompson. And I couldn't really tell you why. My dad's never given me a straight answer. It is his middle name, Michael. But yeah, so I got to hold the full name just so people know which one I am.
Okay. It doesn't have anything to do with anything, but my wife's middle name is Christine. My middle name is Christopher, and all three of our boys we named Christian. So your family's not all that weird. Maybe they are. I don't know. But on that count, own it. Okay, well, so let's start with that. You live here in Pensacola. Why do you want to be a congressman?
And they tell you if you don't see the change you want in the world, you have to be that change. A lot of people who are running for the seat have a lot of things in common. You know, they're willing to pay $10,000 to be on the ballot. They've got the same kind of old ideas that have put Floridians in a bind so far. And I said, you know what? I want to be the person who's gonna fix problems. So, you know, when I was qualifying for the ballot, I was the only person to get on there by petition. And it meant that I got to talk to about 1,000 people in the short little 10 days they gave me to qualify. And I got to talk to people and hear what their issues were. I put my platform together that way. I'm going to go fight basically for my own community. I'm also the only person who was born and raised here.
You know, it's interesting you say that. I think, do I recall correctly that you were the one who was not in the Navarre Forum? Am I remembering that correctly?
No, I was at the Navarre Forum.
You were at the Navarre. Okay, I apologize. My mistake. And by the way, you guys have another one coming up tonight in Eglin, right? Or near Eglin?
Yeah, we sure do with the Niceville Republican woman.
Yeah, that should be very interesting. And it's, you know, such a short time frame to get your signatures, to get on the ballot, to, you know, all the early, everything to get done before January 28th. You said you want to be the change mm-hmm. that you wish you could see in the world. You talked to 1,000 people to get your signatures, of course. What is the change? What is the thing that you think needs to be done that either, you know, wasn't done by Matt Gaetz or Jeff Miller before him or hasn't been done in general by Congress? And, you know, what is your goal? What do you want to accomplish?
Yeah, we've got big goals and we've got local goals, right? And then the number one issue for Floridians in the Panhandle is the insurance crisis. People are being priced out of their homes, and people who have paid off their homes are now finding themselves with a brand new mortgage payment equivalent. And, you know, I would say 8 out of 10 people, that is their number one item. And the problem is that local, you know, Florida politicians haven't quite fixed the problem. And I think it's going to require going to the federal government and creating, you know, federal policy in order to bring things down across this entire region. The problem is Florida's, you know, the highest risk for hurricanes, and insurers really don't want to even deal with it at this point. They're pulling out of the state wholesale and leaving Floridians to foot the bill.
The working on
things are.
Yeah, go ahead. I was just gonna say working on it as a federal policy. My first thought about that, or I just wonder your answer is, you know, what would be the constitutional basis, the Article 1, Section 8 kind of basis for creating oversight of home insurance at the federal level? I'm not saying it doesn't already exist. I'm just saying it's been a state issue, and obviously I agree. The state has not done what needs to be done to solve it. But the question is, how, as a federal agent, would you be able to make that happen?
Yeah, we've got a couple of different avenues. There is precedent for it with the national flood insurance, for example. When you have national emergencies, you know, hurricanes normally arise to the level of being national emergencies, and there's some federal powers there as well. But if you put it underneath commerce power, when there are companies that are selling things to multiple states or businesses that affect interstate commerce, and you have prices that are pushing people out of the state or not allowing people to travel to the state, there's a lot of different ways to get the hooks in. My biggest ideas are making multi-state like insurance risk-based expansions. So, for example, saying if you want to insure a coastal state that's subject to hurricanes with hurricane insurance, you have to insure all of them at once. That way people have an expanded risk base. And it also helps insurance companies, because if you're just insuring Florida, for example, and a hurricane comes through, all of the people you insure are having a claim at the same time. And they have to have these high reserve requirements because it's all catastrophic events. And that isn't conducive to lower prices or bringing in new insurers to Florida itself.
Okay.
Another thing I'm really big on. Oh,
go ahead. No, I'm listening. It's interesting. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to transition another big part of my platform. And this is also from speaking to a lot of folks. We have a ton of amazing benefits out there for service members and veterans, but they're incredibly difficult to access, and the timelines for accessing them are frankly ridiculous. For most medical and financial benefits, you're told when you apply, 125 days is when you'll first hear back from us. Okay, so you need money or you need medical care, and you're waiting 4 months, basically. When you finally get your response back, you know, approve or deny, if you need to appeal that, it's going to be an additional 4 months. I think we can commit to the people who fought for our country that you can have at least your initial application reviewed within a month. That's my goal. I'd also like to set up a veteran resource center in Northwest Florida so that you can access all of your benefits in one place. And what that means is, instead of being told, oh, you're at the wrong office for this, please drive 30 minutes that way, go find it yourself, it's you can go across the hall. We already have all your information processed or all of your information here. You don't have to reapply another time. You don't have to send one form 25 different places. We're all going to take care of it for you here. And I've had a lot of veterans complain to me, like, I don't even know what's available. And the only ones who actually get access to everything is someone who's lucky enough to have a spouse or family member able to walk them all the way through it. We're leaving disabled veterans who fought for our country to fend for themselves. Also, more transition services. I've had people say it's akin to, you know, starting an entire new job when you come back from the service. You are on a bus, and they say, thank you so much for all this help, but we were telling you when to wake up, when to eat, when to go to sleep, and now you're all on your own. Go find a job. Good luck. It'd be very nice, and more than very nice, it's really a necessity to have some sort of transition services or programs to get service folk back into civilian life.
And do you feel like those transitional services or the sort of consolidation of access information for healthcare services, that does not exist, or it just does not get effectively conveyed to veterans and service members in order for them to be able to take access, or both?
It's both. We have some services. A lot of it is private sector and charitable organizations. But there needs to be something that is built into the VA system that we have that makes it more accessible.
I always like to ask the obvious objections that people are likely to ask. I think with you, the first most obvious one is you're very young. You are constitutionally eligible at 27, but a lot of people might look at 27 and say, does he know enough about the world and life in Northwest Florida to be able to represent us effectively at the federal government? Will he be taken seriously if he gets there by the sometimes much older people that you'll be working with? What's your answer?
Yeah, Andrew, I don't like to buy green bananas, right? Waiting on things to mature and ripen just doesn't really make sense for me. When I see something I need for my community, I go out and fight for it. You know, when I got my very first job, I was 15 years old. I was working at Great American Cookies in Cordova Mall. And I went to every single business in that mall asking for a job because, you know, my family was in need. So I ended up working my first job at my first week at that job. I think I worked 20 hours at $8 an hour, and I went and handed the $100 to my parents to be able to turn our power back on. It was, you know, something I had to do, not something I wanted to do, and I had the same sense of drive with this situation. I am seeing my community in crises, and I can't just sit by on the sidelines and do it. And I also, looking across the field of, you know, the folks who are running against me, nobody has the energy or stamina that I do. I'm running against people who are across multiple generations, ranging, I think, up to about 75 years old. And there's a lot of questions on who can go up to Washington, who can fight for Northwest Florida. I'll tell you one thing that's great about being 27 years old is I haven't been corrupted by any of this D.C. garbage. And a lot of folks are trying to bring D.C. Washington values to Northwest Florida. And I say, no, we got to have Northwest Florida fighting up in D.C.
The other, I would say, sort of obvious question, you sort of answered indirectly a little bit, but yes, being young, but also you don't have any legislative experience. There's only a couple of candidates in the field who have any legislative or really government-based experience, and you want to, you know, kind of step into a major role in Washington. How would you answer that objection?
Well, I've been a trial attorney for several years now, and that comes with, you know, statutory analysis. I mean, when I was in law school, I was a political activist and had a lot to do with writing legislation. I think, you know, the other folks in the field who have legislative experience, there's some doubts behind that. Some of the folks like to introduce bills that they know are going to die. They do political grandstanding. These are all things I, you know, freshman Congress people can learn on the job. The more important thing is who's going to fight for us, who's going to fight for Northwest Florida, and importantly, who's going to be able to build consensus and actually get things done. It's not about just posting bills up and letting them die. It's not about making a great podcast. It's about who can actually get the votes to make policy that's going to improve the lives of Northwest Florida. And that's what I'm committed to doing.
The last question I'll ask you, and I'm assuming that this is a question a lot of the people you talk to in order to get your 1,000 signatures, again, you're the only one who got signatures and didn't just pay for your qualification fee. And I think it's a question a lot of people just want the answer to when they're thinking about who they want to put up in Congress. Are you going to be a Trump guy? Are you not a Trump guy? Are you going to work for the president's agenda? What's your position on President Trump?
I think the people have spoken overwhelmingly for what their preferences are. You know, this is a historic election, and I plan to implement the mandate of the people. At the same time, I'm no puppet. I will vote on party lines for conservative issues. I'm a very conservative guy, but I think for myself, and I will always put Florida first. When it comes down to it, this is my home. This is where I've always been, and I will vote according to my constituents' interests above anything else.
Michael Dylan Thomas, a candidate for Congressional District 1. Thank you for running. It's a full field. I almost wish I thank everybody for running because I think it takes a lot of guts to run. I almost wish we had fewer choices because 30% probably wins this race. 25% might win this race, and I don't think that's really the best situation. But I always appreciate anybody who will be willing to put themselves out there for it. Best of luck on the 28th. Michael Dylan Thomas, thank you for the time, sir.
Thank you very much. It's Michael Dylan Thompson.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I am such an idiot. I said it wrong the whole interview. You should have told me at the beginning. I think I wrote that down as one way.
You had it right at the beginning.
I had it right in the beginning. Okay, Michael Dylan Thompson. I'm so sorry. You can call me Mr. McKee if you want. anyway, Michael Dylan Thompson. Thank you for the time, sir.
Thank you so much. And you can find me anywhere by my initials, MDTforCongress.com, MDTforCongress, Facebook, Instagram. Be glad to talk to you if you want to reach out to me.
Back with our final installment, Act 3 of the OLF 8 Superdrama.
Listen on.